Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5507, Public Building Codes Division. Good morning. They're over here, goodness sake. Oh, let's go ahead. Do you mind, Debbie, just going ahead and responding on your, covering your responses to, testimony?
I'm glad to. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Debbie Lincoln, Deputy Director of Department of Consumer and Business Services. We've passed out, some more information on, Ms. Heiss's case. The request was, what exactly did this contractor do for her and what was the nature of the problem? And on the back of that then is an outline of what we do in investigations. I agreed with Senator Dukes that we would look internally, use our internal auditor to look at that process during the interim. Ms. Heiss has an historical home in Portland. Mr. Navin restores historical homes, and apparently she hired him to do a remodel of her entire home. Again, that portion of her complaint is not with us. It's with the Construction Contractors Board. Our issue with Mr. Navin results from a complaint filed by the City of Portland and involves his not getting permits for license for plumbing and electrical work and for doing that work without being licensed, and we are proceeding on that. There's a hearing scheduled in June that had to be adjusted around the lawyer schedules for both parties, or for us and for Mr. Navin. Ms. Heiss is not a party to that hearing, but my understanding is that she's interested in being a witness or being involved somehow. Thank you. The insurance company for Mr. Navin, under the civil settlement, is on the hook for a $65,000 payment to Ms. Heiss. In the last paragraph down there, it says that Ms. Heiss will receive a cash payment. That, of course, assumes that everything goes through as we see it right now. But she is in line for that cash payment to fix whatever it is Mr. Navin did not do appropriately on her house. So that's in response, and again, we'll be glad to answer any more questions on this case that the committee has.
Questions or discussion? Thanks. I'm sure this has taken a great deal of work, and we appreciate it.
I'd like to thank Linda Riddle and Joe Brewer from the Building Codes for doing all this work.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm the administrator at the Building Codes Division. I'd like to begin my presentation this morning on page 87 of your binder, beginning with the Building Codes mission. The mission of the Building Codes Division is to ensure the construction of safe buildings in Oregon while promoting the safe business climate. We accomplish this goal by administering the statewide building code. This involves the coordination of 11 code areas, ranging from the Fire and Life Safety Code to Oregon's accessibility codes. Oregon is one of 20-plus states that adopts a statewide building code in the belief that a consistent standard statewide provides for a better economic environment for contractors to operate in. We provide timely and consistent rule interpretation, code interpretation to our partners in the jurisdictions as well as to the industries we serve. We investigate code and license violations. We certify inspectors and licensed trades professionals. We issue construction and operating permits, and we conduct inspections in the area of the state where the provider is, I mean, the state is a provider of last resort. In all, the division directly regulates 40,000 individuals. We indirectly touch the lives of every Oregonian. So the work the division does is very important. We take it very seriously and try to be proactive in our interactions with those we regulate and the jurisdictions we serve. Our division's goals are directly linked to the five areas that Director Nydig spoke to in her opening overview of the agency. I'll remind you that those areas are customer service, regulatory reform, public information, workforce development, and technology. My fingers aren't working this morning, of course. Bear with me while I fumble here. The goals of the Building Code Division are first to work with our partners in the local jurisdictions around the state that provide the vast majority of code administration and inspection and compliance services. We work to provide opportunities to industry to participate in our regulatory processes. We've re-engineered our compliance process. We've spent a lot of time talking about that with regard to Mrs. Heiss' case to ensure a fair and consistent system that is timely and provides due process both to the violator and to the individuals lodging the complaint. I would give you an example of our two compliance programs we currently have underway in our state. We're currently working with four counties in the Central Oregon area on a compliance pilot over there, where an investigator has been hired to work for the city of Bend and is taking referrals from contractors and jurisdictions around the area responding to license and permit violations. The other compliance pilot that we're working on is with Washington County, where we've provided training to the Washington County staff. They're acting as agents of the board, agents of the director in their compliance activities, and issuing citations on job sites for contractors that fail to comply. Our goal is to evaluate both of these approaches, trying to determine which is the most cost-effective so that we can put together a model that will work statewide in terms of compliance activities. We're very pleased to report that our turnaround time on compliance cases has been reduced from an average of over 6 months to now an average of just over 3 months, and again, we're working very hard to try and improve on those results. We've re-engineered our process for providing consultation and oversight to the local jurisdictions we work with. This is an example of, I believe, meeting our customer service goal, working hard to identify what are best practices and provide our services to the jurisdictions in a consultative manner. We emphasize compliance with our code, with our licensing statutes, and respond to complaints from industry in the jurisdictions with respect to those violations. We've also responded to the direction of our interim steering committee. That interim steering committee, made up of a broad cross-section of industry as well as our partner regulators in the jurisdictions, identified two priorities: consistency and compliance. We've tried to redirect our goals, redirect our efforts to make sure that in all cases we're addressing both those issues. Now on page 88 in our binder, the stakeholders the division works with are Oregonians that live and work in our structures, our partners in the local jurisdictions, builders and contractors in the area, manufacturers and dealers of manufactured structures, architects, engineers, design professionals of all kinds, licensed crafts, and again, the contractors we serve. Some of the successes we've experienced in the 99-01 biennium are that we've worked with the interim steering committee again to evaluate program effectiveness and enhance our operations. Again, the two significant priorities that were identified were consistency and compliance. That message has been received, and we're working diligently to try and move in that direction. We've implemented new training on boiler operations as schools, places of public assembly, so forth and so on, experience budget cutbacks. We find that in this time and place, the operators of boilers and heating systems are really janitors and the general maintenance staff in these facilities. It creates a very dangerous situation when an individual doesn't understand exactly what potential a boiler has. So the Board of Boiler Rules and the division identified this as a priority and have been providing training in this area for 3 years now. We've done training on post-earthquake inspections, creating a registry of those qualified to go in after an earthquake and evaluate structures for reentry. I'd like to point out that in our state, and in fact in all states that adopt uniform codes, the standard for earthquake recovery is life safety. Our goal in designing and building structures is to give occupants time to get out of the structure, not to create a condition where the structure will be necessarily operable after a significant event like we saw in our neighbors to the north, Washington State. We've worked on manufactured home installation. Again, this is an area we consider key in terms of customer service. Over 80% of the problems experienced by consumers with manufactured homes stem from improper setup. We've worked on flood hazard mitigation training and cross-training for electrical inspectors for residential inspections. This is an effort we're very proud of in terms of trying to get the word out to the public, so forth and so on. We're working with NECA, with IBEW, and with the Oregon Building Officials Association. I owe the jar two quarters, to cross-train electrical inspectors so that there will be more qualified inspectors out there to serve the jurisdictions. We've continued conducting local meetings in all areas of the state that we serve, gathering customer feedback and disseminating information. We try to meet in each area that we serve at least once a year in the evening for a public meeting, give contractors in that area and consumers a chance to come in and tell us what they think of the service we provide. This is a key aspect of our customer service effort. We've automated our license testing system. We've implemented a photo ID system for our licensing process. We've improved our use of the internet as a means of sharing information, and we've begun implementing interactive training. This is something that's very exciting for us. Our hope is at the end of this coming interim to be able to provide the necessary continuing education that we offer through the internet in an interactive fashion so that those located in the far reaches of the state don't necessarily have to travel to the valley to get their training. We hear quite often if we come over to the valley for 2 days of training, that costs us 4 days because it's 1 day to travel and 1 day to come back. We've identified as this is a priority and want to address it through this effort. We've established the Tri-County Service Center with the purpose of streamlining code administration services in the metro area. There are 27 jurisdictions in the metro area. It's very challenging to try and gain consistency in how the code's administered. We're working on forms and procedures, dispute resolution, code interpretations, and we've established a minor label program. One of the things that's really been interesting in getting the 27 jurisdictions in that area together is to see the lights come on when you sit down with a group of building officials that represent those different jurisdictions, and they begin to understand really how different their procedures and operations are. And in many cases, with no real reason for the difference, just a lack of awareness that it's done differently elsewhere. The minor label program has been very successful. We've sold over 20,000 permits, labels, in the first year of, less than the first year of operation. A minor label is a permit for a project that's small in nature, perhaps installing a couple of outlets or perhaps replacing a sink in the bathroom. In the past, much of this work has gone unpermitted simply because contractors in the metro area had to carry different minor labels for each jurisdiction they worked in. And I'm sure you can appreciate that a contractor who's doing a job in Lake Oswego later finds out that the job was really in Tualatin and has purchased this permit in Lake Oswego and now gets fined for Tualatin for not having a permit, that creates a natural tension in the system. So this approach has allowed us to create a minor label that's applicable across all those areas. And in fact, we've received a request from the Oregon Building Officials Association to put together a statewide minor label program. We'll be working on that this interim as well. As far as our anticipated results for the 0103 biennium, we hope to continue to work to enhance our partnerships with the local jurisdictions and the industries we serve. We've worked with the Oregon Building Officials Association in problem areas to bring them in and assist us in terms of performing peer review. This reduces the level of conflict, perhaps, between the jurisdiction and the division when you can bring in a panel of the jurisdiction's officials, peers. They look at the situation and then explain to both sides what's going on here and what needs to be changed to be fixed. It's very beneficial. We've expanded, as I said, expanded the division's use of the internet and continue to work in that area, continue to plan to work in that area, and expand our efforts. We'll continue to emphasize code compliance with our licensing laws and permitting laws, and develop the best practices that I spoke to earlier as models to share with the local jurisdictions in our program reviews. We'd like to work to implement a regional concept to enhance code consistency, based on what we're learning in the metro area, but without the board structure that's been put in place. The division doesn't believe that we necessarily need to have as many different boards established as we have regions. I think there are already entities that we can work with. For instance, in Southern Oregon, the International Conference of Building Officials chapter down there is very active. We believe we can work with a forum such as that to try and drive code consistency in the area. We want to continue to improve our customer service by establishing service norms, such as the turnaround times that we've established for plan review. Again, meeting our residential plan review turnaround time in less than 2 weeks, commercial plan review in less than 30 days. We're going to implement our dispute resolution and code consistency processes in the metro area. Training on those activities is scheduled for May 22nd, and we're inviting all of the jurisdictions in that area to come and hear the same words at the same time about those processes and what benefits they can bring to the jurisdictions in question. With that, I think I've reached the point in our presentation where I turn this over to Satish, unless there are questions.
Any questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I've got a long-standing history with the department, with the Building Codes Division, so I hope that you'll take anything that I say or feel about this group of folks with that grain of salt and with that in mind. 1995 was the passage of Senate Bill 35, as I recall, that gave an opportunity for local building codes to proceed to local building programs to be formulated basically away from state government. I think it was probably stuffed down the throat of these folks. I don't think that they really enjoyed the fact that they were losing part of their kingdoms. I've always had the impression that we just have to just about extract a lot of this stuff out of them a little at a time, like drawing blood out of a turnip. But gradually we see some of these programs being successful. Last session we did have the issue of the Tri-County Service Program, and it did come back, and I understand that it is being successful. With this being the case, I would like to know more about the peer review process, and I would like to know how Oregon compares to our adjoining neighbors in California and Idaho and Washington and other states. They all have building programs, I'm sure. They all implement building codes. Oregon is somewhat unique in that we don't have, I think, well, I'll let the agency tell how much similar or dissimilar we are than other states, but I'd also like to know about the meetings throughout the state, whether or not we're getting cards and letters from our constituents back to the department about how truly meaningful those were relative to the training and the interactivity that they had on the programs. And I would like to know something about the fact that we have set up the training via the internet, according to the 1999-01 successes, how many are actually availing themselves of that. So I'd like to, rather than talk the talk, I'd like to see a little bit of the walk, and I'd like to have some reports. Same thing is true with regard to life safety. We talk about it. Mr. Brewer and I have gone over a case that happened in a theater in my jurisdiction in House District 60, where the theater, all they had to do was change the size of their I don't remember what it is, and he could tell us, but and it created an unsafe, it made an unsafe situation worse, and it brought it into code. And by changing the, and maybe Mr. Brewer will have to help me with this, but my recollection is that by decreasing the size of the the theater stayed the same, multiplex theater, but by decreasing the size of the actual waiting area of the theater, then it brought the rest of the theater into code for some reason. And again, he could explain it to us, but I looked at that and I said, something's got to be done. We talked about it at the time. Mr. Brewer and I talked about it at the time. It wasn't the best situation, and it certainly wasn't the one that he advocated. It was a resolution to a problem that had some real difficulties to it. But I'm wondering what, as a result of that, he was opposed to what happened because it was a fire life safety issue. But I'm wondering what he has done in his department to introduce anything that would change that in the way of legislation, particularly in light of the comments made about earthquakes and other fire life safety issues. So I'd like to have just a little bit more report of actually what's happened and the successes in relationship to the money that's gone into the department and the benefits that we're getting out of the department.
You've got a handful of questions in there.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'd like to review the list of questions and make sure I haven't missed anything. Representative Butler, we'd like to hear from you with respect to peer review, some of the experiences we've had in that area. We'd like me to talk about the differences in Oregon's system as compared to Washington State and California. We'd like to have some feedback on the meetings we've conducted around the state and the quality of feedback we get, the sense of how folks are responding. I would like to have some sense of the quality of training that's being provided. And then finally, would like me to address the life safety condition in the theater in Ontario, I believe it was, which I will parallel with an experience we had on the Oregon coast. Did I get everything, Madam Chair?
There's
a couple more there, but we'll go ahead and hit those, please, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Butler, peer review process has been very successful in terms of helping the division diffuse situations with jurisdictions where either through complaint or through our program review, we found that there may be problems with the operation of that particular jurisdiction. Jurisdiction not far from here, you may have read about in the paper, we learned through a complaint that inspections were being done without appropriate certification. We worked with that jurisdiction, engaged them, also engaged the Oregon building officials in terms of taking a look at the situation. They supported our observations, and that's just one example. We were able to effect compliance, corrections in the administrative processes, and gained an acknowledgement from the building official who voluntarily turned back his certification as a building official for a period of time to take remedial training and to address the issues that perhaps they'd been coloring outside the lines with. Another jurisdiction on the Oregon coast, we've been engaged for some time now, a number of years, trying to address their building inspection program. We've identified a number of structures in that jurisdiction, one which I'll parallel with the theater life safety issue. We again brought in a panel of building officials from several jurisdictions. They went in, looked at our report, looked at the conditions in the field, supported our observations, and we've been successful there in terms of driving some change in that building department's activities. In that case, the issue really wasn't administrative violations. It was simply, in my mind, a lack of resource being applied to those activities. Given the amount of growth, the number of activities going on, one person simply couldn't touch all the bases. Unfortunately, we didn't convince the jurisdiction to hire more people. What they've done, I believe, is give the jurisdiction up to the county so that the county is now performing that inspection. And I want to go on the record saying that the division, I personally, and every member of our management team believes that These building inspection activities are better provided at the local level. We would like to see statewide our division out of that role, because it not only confuses us, it diffuses our focus. If we could focus on compliance, on oversight, on adopting coherent standards, I think we could do a better job. And we've pursued a number of models. The representative spoke to Senate Bill 35 a couple of sessions ago. One of the amendments, I think there was dash 17 or something, would have had the counties take the program on from a mandatory perspective. And that's certainly something that we believe needs to be looked at. We think there's an opportunity there. But at the same time, the division understands its role as a provider of last resort, accepts it, and I think we do an exceptional job in providing that service. The meetings that we conduct around the state, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the feedback we get for the most part is that folks are happy with our service. They wish more could be done locally. They wish that, for instance, in the Pendleton area when we meet there, they would like to have all their plan review conducted in Pendleton rather than having it sent to Salem. But for staffing reasons, it's necessary for us on occasion to have that work sent to Salem, either because there's insufficient work in Salem or there's too much work in Pendleton. Again, trying to maintain that two-week turnaround. Our electrical program is very successful in terms of its outreach. We had 60-plus attendees at a meeting in Bend recently. Last week, we had a meeting in Portland. We had 65 contractors and journey-level workers, licensed individuals attend, as well as jurisdiction. So we believe that this is a model where we can get out, give people information firsthand, begin to drive consistency, get contractors and the regulators in the same room talking about the issues and talking about where their concerns are. It's a very slow process. It's going to take time. We've been at it now for some 4 years, but slowly at each meeting our attendance improves, and we're beginning to feel as though this is bearing some real fruit. We also gather feedback from customers in terms of their input to us with respect to particular employees. Not this past biennium, but in bienniums prior to that, we've conducted customer surveys to gather feedback. And our customers continue to tell us they're concerned about two things, consistency and timeliness. Slightly different focus than the steering committee provided for us. They believe consistency and compliance. Consistency and timeliness was the surveys. Consistency and compliance was the focus of our interim steering committee. So we're working on all those areas. The quality of our training, we let an RFP each biennium. We contract with the Oregon Building Officials Association, the Oregon Building Industry Association, National Conference of States on Building Codes and Standards. Those contractors bring in professional trainers from the International Conference of Building Officials, from jurisdictions as far as away as the East Coast, to inform our inspectors and our building officials on what the latest developments are, what codes are changing. It's a wide range of activities, from soft skills, how to deal with the media, to how to deal with the code itself and interpret particular technical sections of the code. The feedback we get on those training activities is very positive. We monitor the classes to ensure that they are conducted and the quality of training is high, and then when we're paying for 4 hours of training, we get 4 hours of training. I don't have a compilation of the feedback from the attendees, but certainly that could be assembled, and I'd be happy to provide it should the committee wish to have that information. A life safety standard that Representative Butler spoke to, Madam Chair, it's a complex issue. The code in many ways is like the Bible. If you press the code too hard, it becomes very, too literally, it becomes very difficult to interpret it. That's the job of the building official in the local jurisdiction. That person's job is to interpret that code for that community. The building official in the particular case in related to the theater in Ontario reached an interpretation whereby a reduction in the size of the lobby would meet the code, and technically it did meet the code. Based on the occupancy rating of the theaters, when the code indicated in an area of public assembly those individuals would be leaving and how much room was needed in the lobby for those folks to exit effectively, all tied together. And the building official in this particular case made a call that Representative Butler's correct, Madam Chair. I didn't necessarily support because I felt like it was interpreting the code perhaps too literally. The intent of the code may not have been met in that case. But the letter of the code was, and it was that local building official's call to make that interpretation. And in that sense, we supported that individual. Contrast that with the high school that we experienced on the Oregon coast. Without a great deal of cooperation from the jurisdiction, we came in, did an extensive review of this high school, found that a plan review was not conducted, had the jurisdiction send that plan out for a review by an independent third-party provider, private contractor, came back with some significant code violations. We did a field evaluation, found a pattern, a consistent pattern of code violations in particular areas with respect to maintaining firewall integrity up to the structure, so forth and so on. We engaged that jurisdiction, brought in the Oregon Building Officials Association, and eventually moved that jurisdiction to a place where they understood that the high school as it was built did not comply with the code. And those corrections were made. And we did it in time to have the contractor make the lion's share of those corrections with no cost to the jurisdiction. The contractor was even surprised that some of this work had passed inspection. So that's the way we work with jurisdictions. That's the way we use plan review. And we're very fortunate to have an entity like the Oregon Building Officials Association to work with us in that context. As far as our neighbors to the north and south, both have a statewide code model. Both are very different than Oregon's. I was fortunate enough to sit on the State Building Code Council in Washington State. That entity adopts the code for the state. All cities and jurisdictions within the state of Washington can amend their code. That means that work you do in Seattle might be very different than work you do in Spokane. And in fact, it is. So that's one model that's pursued by Washington State. Similar model to what California has. California adopts the code again at the state level, but I don't believe it's mandatory in California for jurisdictions to adopt that code, and they do have the ability to amend it extensively. So again, you fail to get the consistent statewide standard. Oregon's model is called a mini-maxi code. It's adopted at the statewide level. You adopt a nationally recognized, nationally promulgated code. It can be amended at the state level through a very extensive 1 year and 3 year code amendment process, but then it cannot be amended at the local level. The way issues are dealt with at the local level, the building official, the administration at the local level can petition the division. We've received, I think, 3 of these since I've been with the state. The state then reviews them and has a very specific criteria in statute to compare that application to. And if it's necessary, for instance, I'm thinking of a case in Gresham where the desire was to sprinkle the residents in lieu of providing fire road, a second fire road to access this particular butte. It's a Gresham butte. Division reviewed that, agreed with the jurisdiction that it was prudent not only from a cost standpoint but from an environmental standpoint to not put that second road in and to call for those residences to be sprinkled. So we engage with the local jurisdictions very actively in addressing their needs. And we're proud of the record that we have in that respect. I believe I've answered all the questions the representative had. I may have missed some, so I'd
thank you, Madam Chair. So what you're telling me, Mr. Brewer, is that Washington and California, the north and south of us, have a more local-driven code. So that, for instance, perhaps in the more earthquake-prone areas of Washington, they would have one code, but in another area they would have a different code, or that perhaps on the California coast, hurricane clips would be put on the hurricane side, and on the other side of the state, where the winds might be easterly, prevailing winds, you could put the hurricane clips on the easterly side, because the winds don't come from the hurricane side as they would on the coast. Is that what we're saying?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, certainly one could interpret it as being more locally driven. What I had intended to convey was that the codes in those states can be amended by local ordinance, so that it's not necessarily a question of deciding on each job site where you put the hurricane clips.
Is that a bad thing that they could be, amended locally? Is that a bad thing, Joe?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I don't believe it's a bad thing. There are a number of states that follow that model. I believe there are 10 states also that follow Oregon's model and have a minimum maximum code. Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I simply believe it's different and is dependent on how the legislature in those states outline the policy and the process for those states to adopt their codes.
Based upon your, Madam Chair, if I may, based upon your experience now, having come from Washington, from a state where they have some latitude, Eastern Washington versus Western Washington, and having lived in Oregon where you recognize that there is an Eastern Oregon and a Western Oregon, should Oregon begin to move away from a mini maxi code and give some latitude to local jurisdictions who feel like that maybe the same codes that apply in downtown Portland or in Lincoln City should probably be different in Bend, Oregon, or in Burns, Oregon, or in Halfway, Oregon?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, in characterizing Oregon's code as a mini-maxi code, I did not intend to imply that there's no flexibility for local requirements. The requirements, for instance, in terms of wind zones for the Oregon coast are very much different than they are in Eastern Oregon. It's not a question of one standard applying statewide, it's a question of there being a consistent criteria. And again, I didn't intend to imply that there's no flexibility at the local level in terms of changing the code. In some states, that process is done through local ordinance by the City Council, County Commission. In Oregon, that process is done by our boards, by the administration, based on petition from the local jurisdiction. So, again, going to the hurricane clip example that Representative Butler outlines, if that appeal were made to the structures board in our case could make a determination as to whether hurricane clips should be placed differently in Mount Huron County than they should in Lincoln County. So, again, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I believe the flexibility is there. I think the process is different. I think the second part of the representative's question was, do I personally believe Oregon should move away from its mini-maxi code model? Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I believe not. In fact, I believe that other states look to Oregon as a model. I believe other states are continuing to progress toward a minimum maximum standard. A few years ago, I think there were only 6 states, and I believe there's over 10 that have this minimum maximum standard. Again, as long as adequate flexibility is provided, as long as there's sensitivity at the state level to local needs, which I believe there is in our division, I think that Oregon's model is superior. Again, it's been in place since 1973. Oregon was one of the first states to adopt this concept. Finally, with respect to Representative Butler's characterization of my having come from Washington, I lived in Oregon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for 15 years before I went up there. Went up there for a 5-year period and came back because this is where our home is. So I hope that even though we've only been here for some 20-odd years, we'd be considered Oregonians.
Finally, just one final question is relative to your accent as an Oregonian, but that's fine. you'll eventually work your way into that, I suppose. One final question relative to that. Do you think that the petitioning process and to the state boards and to the state directors, whatever you would call them, this petitioning process to make the modifications that need to be done locally so that the programs can be more local driven, similar to California, Washington, you believe that that's First of all, is it really as speedily being done as you're giving us the impression it is, that it's being really proactive as opposed to being reactive and taking a great deal of time, or do you believe that it's being done efficiently and examined carefully so that it takes more time than it perhaps should?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, unfortunately, I'm never happy with the speed at which we address a number of these issues. There are requirements in terms of the Administrative Procedures Act. The division's required to notice the public. The division's required to put it on the board meeting agenda and to conduct a public meeting at which these issues are heard. Certainly, I think the division could move much more rapidly if it were not for the requirements of these public meetings, so forth and so on. I would say at the same time, when these issues are brought to our attention, we contact the jurisdiction, try and get a sense of their urgency, try and get a sense of the turnaround time, and we expedite them to the degree possible. We simply can't step around the requirement for public notice, for getting it on the board agenda, and for inviting everyone to come and share their opinion with respect to it. That's my sense of how these activities are dealt with. We are always working to try and provide a more proactive, a more customer-oriented service to the jurisdictions we serve.
Madam Chair, I'm going to say this straight out. It just takes too stinking long to get small changes made. And I've seen a pilot program in Eastern Oregon attempt to do what we call under four crawl, and I've seen it decimated. And unfortunately, very unfortunately, there was some Mr. Brewer was involved in that process at that particular time, and there was some ill feelings and some mistruths, misstatements of the facts. And I'll just tell you straight out that I just don't feel like that this department is willing to work with all of the jurisdictions throughout Oregon to expedite, to try and encourage the process to be as local as it possibly can, to address the issues, and to have pilot programs. And I only bring up the pilot program because Mr. Brewer brought it up himself. And when Mr. Brewer talks about the peer review process, he only talks about it as diffusing the situations, diffusing problems. This is not being proactive. This department is not being proactive. And I am very concerned about a department which does not address issues proactively, that must be reactive to almost everything. And peer review, by its very nature, is supposed to assist us in the process of being proactive and looking at these situations, helping one another change, as opposed to the peer review process has been very successful in diffusing existing situations. And I just have to tell you straight out that I don't have a great deal of confidence that we are moving in this department in a direction which gives builders in northern, eastern, southern, central Oregon the latitude that they need over their own building programs. And that's why I've asked about the more locally driven programs in Washington and California, as opposed to a program in Oregon that's from 1973 that by our own admission is a program which is bloated with lots of come back and bring it to the committee, go through the process, put it in the public hearings process, and eventually we'll get to it perhaps maybe someday if it's convenient. And that's been my experience in Eastern Oregon and in Southern Oregon, and I think that's the experience of a lot of folks throughout the state, and that's why I need to just spout that off, and I wish the department was a lot more proactive. And I don't know that that even deserves a response, Joe. If you want to tell me that peer reviewing is to take care of successfully diffusing situations that have already occurred, you're welcome to do that, but that ain't what I think a peer review is about.
Senator Dukes.
Yeah, going a little bit on the other side, and I'm not going to try to defend the agency or say that I didn't wish they were more proactive, too, because I often do. But I like the mini maxi system.
Okay.
I think it has worked well for Oregon. Is it a slow system? Yes. But if you're going to monkey with things like plumbing and electrical codes, I would like it not to be a rapid system. The national code, and we interact a lot in the development of the national code. We're not quiet about that. So the national code is one that's adopted and used in, I think, most of the states at this point. I mean, some of them have modified it and done things with it, but it gives us some basic assurance. I mean, it's been around for a long time, and modifications are made to it, and then we have a process that is a very slow process for making changes at the state level, but I've watched changes happen. It is possible if you get all the players lined up to make that happen, but you've got to involve everybody. And I think that's right as well. And there's this whole gamut here. I've got a local dentist who wants to be able to plumb his apartment building that he owns. And state law says that he can plumb his own home, but if somebody else is going to live there, he can't do the plumbing. He is not a plumber, a licensed plumber. He just has been doing this for a long time. Then you've got on the other end the woman who had a plumber in to hook up her redo her bathroom, and she ended up with a bathtub that had to be filled out of the shower head. It was put in backwards. So there's this whole gamut, and personally, and I never say this with agencies, I'm not sure, and I probably should look at the staff before I say this, I'm not sure that they're equipped at the top level to be able to do some of the things that you're asking for. I never have been happy with local enforcement of the code. You end up with different interpretations of the code, and you end up with a red-tagged project that never would have been red-tagged, and it takes us, 2 weeks to get it un-red-tagged from the state level because somebody got their nose bent out of shape and decided they had the authority to do it at the local level. You have contractors running all over the county trying to figure out, this month, where do I get my permits? Because they're different than they were last month, because somebody couldn't make enough money on it, so they dropped it. And I think it's a highly inefficient system. They've worked out things in the Tri-County because most of the state lives there. The rest of us are sort of out peddling on our own. But I think it works well. And it's got its flaws, and the flaws are always the apparent ones. But when you're talking about people's lives and health and safety, as you are with electrical and plumbing, then I will err on the side of caution. The one thing that we don't do in this state that nearly every other state does, I believe, California and Washington certainly do, that I think we should do, is license our contractors.
License the contractors?
Yeah, the building contractors. We do not. We register. You now have to take an 8-hour class so that you know which end of the hammer you're hanging up to. But we do not license them. They don't have to know much of anything out there. You have to get registered and bonded, and that's it.
I think in the essence of the fact that I've got a whole bunch of fourth graders waiting for me to come talk to mature on the other side of the building, I don't run very fast in heels, we'll take a 5-minute break. But before we do, I'd like very much Mr. Brewer and Ms. Lincoln and Tom Butler to get together sometime in the next 2 days before we finalize this budget and resolve the concerns that Representative Butler has. And Lori, if you wouldn't mind being in on that meeting as well so we can have some continuity here, I would appreciate it. And Senator, do you mind starting the meeting back up in case I'm not back?
I don't mind.
5 or 8 minutes at the most.
Okay. Thank you.